here on my own and I'm over it.
All right, hello there. Welcome. We're not over it. We're just starting. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and we've got the remote round table here in different three different cities. This is North Shore Sports Night. We've been doing this for how long, Tim?
2006.
So this is either our 16th or 17th year.
Yeah.
And we won't be at the Sangha Center tomorrow night, sadly, but I do remember that first year when we had so much fun covering the Gloucester High School hockey team. We're going to talk a little bit about them later on. And here they are knocking on the door once again. So sort of like, I don't want to call it a bookend, but, you know, history repeating itself, I hope.
Yes, love to see that. We'll talk more about Jack Costanza and company coming up.
I want to mention, you know, let's get started right there. We're going to talk with Gary Larrabee later on. We're going to just do the sports writers tonight. Gary will be buying it around the bottom of the hour to talk golf. And Mike Grenier will start with basketball and see where that goes. But good segue here, talking about the local tournaments. Oh, and by the way, let me just promote this immediately. The Sports Writers podcast tomorrow, that'll be dropping around 8 a.m. with host Bill Newell, will be talking about the Final Four matchups in hockey and basketball, and they'll be talking about teams that went deep into the tournament, add a few more local sports notes, and that'll be tomorrow's Sports Writers podcast right here on msonewsports.com. And, of course, Phil Stacey, the executive sports director of the Salem News, along with the assistant sports editor, Matt Williams, sports writer Nick Giannino of the Salem News, and, of course, Gloucester's Nick Kukuru of the Gloucester Times will all be on board talking with Bill. Now, by the way, tonight, before we get into our combination here, let's see. Tonight it is Linfield in Division III facing Marlboro, and I talked with Coach, we texted back and forth with Linfield's coach, John Gardner. He was a little... I don't know what the right word is. Anxious, I guess. They were notified after the game Saturday night that they were going to play on Monday. And some other schools have 4 or 5 days off between games. I don't know how much time Marlboro has had off, but Linfield has to play tonight, 7:45 p.m. at the Songus Center in Lowell. Also in Division II, it's Duxbury versus Tewksbury, and they will play the winner of the Gloucester-Canton game in Division II. Duxbury playing tonight against Tewksbury at the Loring Arena in Framingham. That's a 7:30 start. And in Division IV, Watertown and Stoneham are tied at 3, according to the Boston Globe, but don't have what period it's in. That's currently going on at the Sangha Center, so it's got to be late in the game. In girls hockey tonight, Shrewsbury and Arlington are playing at the Galo Arena in Bourne. Arlington 2, Shrewsbury 1, but again, no time frame on that. And in Division 2 girls hockey, Medfield / Norton is leading Algonquin / Hudson 2-1. And again, well, this one's in the third period. They do have that up there, 8:28. The other game in Division 2 is Canton and Natick, again playing in Bourne, and that is girls hockey. We'll try to take a look at basketball later. If we don't get to it, I can guarantee you the boys will tomorrow on the Sports Writers podcast. Now, Coach, back to the Gloucester game. I want to contrast two people. I want to contrast our own Barry Hanrahan, whom we know and love, against someone who will not be named on Boston Radio. Boston Radio, I was listening Saturday, I think it was, and in fact, I don't even know who the guy was, but it was on one of the two major sports stations. And Tim, he was talking about Joe Judge, who was recently the coach of the New York Giants, now is an assistant coach with the New England Patriots. And some of the words he used were idiot, stupid, know-nothing, and things like that. He called him an idiot I don't know how many times. And I was just, I almost drove the car off the road because I'm thinking, what in heaven's name gives you the right to think you can say stuff like that about something you don't even know about? And Tim, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when people believe that they know more than the professionals do, or even, let's bring it to the high school level, even the high school coaches. You know, a parent has watched a game on TV, so he knows more than a high school coach. But can you imagine, Tim, calling someone an idiot? And my first, my knee-jerk reaction was, you're not a reporter, you're not a journalist. Because what if you had to talk to that guy? Would you say that to his face? So I don't understand that, Tim. And hold on one second. I want to contrast that with Barry Hanrahan. Barry was at the Gloucester High School game, either Thursday or Friday night, whatever night it was. Barry, to remind people, is the assistant general manager and vice president of the Philadelphia Flyers. He texted me, that night. Was I at the game? And I wasn't, because he was going to tell me he was there. And he texted me that it was a great game. What a thrill for kids to play in front of 2,000 people and win the game in their home rink. And then he said he showed Danny Briere, who is a former Pittsburgh Penguin, I believe, and Philadelphia Flyer, and maybe he played for the Avs. But anyway, Danny Briere is now an assistant to the general manager of the Flyers. He showed Danny Briere the highlight goal of Jack Costanzo, and he said Briere was very impressed. Now, do you see a difference in these two personalities in terms of what sports is all about?
Well, you know, a lot of guys who become sportscasters are guys that never made a pickup team, played in their high school, never thought of trying out for a team in college, but they can voice an opinion, and they make their name by being corrosive, abusive, incendiary. You know, they make remarks to get a reaction from the listeners, because if you simply reported on what you saw in a complimentary fashion, nobody's going to listen to you. So that's why, you know, there's a certain egghead in Boston radio from Green Bay who says some of the most ludicrous things. You know, for him, it's based on fact, because for him, illusion is fact. and you go, what the hell? And I started listening to him several years ago, simply because I just can't take, you know, the slant that they love to take against all the teams in Boston. If you're just going to sit here and criticize all the teams, and, you know, I love Johnny Most. Now, Johnny Most was the ultimate homer for the Boston Celtics while he was the announcer. And if you want to go back and experience a true homer broadcast, go back and see if you can find a file of a Johnny Most broadcast of a Boston Celtics Detroit
McNasty McFilthy
in the mid-1980s. Yeah. You know? But these guys, they have no real knowledge of the sport, no real knowledge of the personnel. They don't bother finding out anything about them, because that would only cloud the myopic vision that they have about what the hell is going on. You know, and the talking heads love to go after the head coaches, the general manager, especially, you know, Bill Belichick, who's only, you know, the most successful head coach in the NFL the last 22 years. He's got more wins, you know. And yeah, he was blessed with a quarterback. He was blessed with a quarterback who turned out to be one of the best players in the history of the game. But he also coached him up to help him become that, gave him the, knew enough to give him the freedom to make decisions out there. You know, was clever enough to put in assistant coaches and get players who fit the system. Now you can say, well, we didn't have all these big name players. Well, big name players don't always fit the system, and we saw that several times during the course of Bill's career here. He's gone out, he's gotten big name people, and they can't learn the system because, sorry, they simply weren't smart enough. And we even had one ex-Baltimore coach to catch all kind of passes from Peyton Manning, came here and said, after like 3 days, said, I can't learn this offense, it's too complicated, and left. So Bill would prefer a smarter player than someone who can't read the playbook or doesn't read the playbook, who can't learn the playbook. because that guy may be athletic, but he's never going to be able to do what you need to do within the scheme that they're playing.
What makes the radio, how do I ask this? What makes Fox TV, Fox News, that is, what makes it so popular when, in the personality, with the personalities who put people down, who trash people? What makes it so popular? Why is sports radio so popular when these guys get on the radio and just trash people? Why are people attracted to that, Tim? What is the social structure of our nation right now, or at least of our sports? No, just the whole nation, that these people are so popular when they talk trash, I guess I go back to, was it Imus and, who's the other guy with the hair? Stern?
Yeah.
You know, why? Well, I don't get it, Tim. I don't get it.
There's elements of the culture that oppose success. They've never had that kind of success. So it's easier to go after those people and call them those names, because it makes up for their own insecurities. And it hits to the insecurities of the people that listen to them. You know, it's like following somebody with orange hair who, you know, mocks everybody, and people go, yeah, that's great, that's funny. Yeah, well, you know, it's not for the people that are being mocked, but for them, it satisfies their need to validation. That's what it's all about, Rich, about validation. Yeah, I sucked as an athlete, but boy, I can really shit on them. And these guys shit on them too, so I like that. You know, Fox News isn't even news, it's an entertainment system. And yeah, they're entertaining me, and I love to be entertained like that. I love to hear them talking down individuals. I love to hear them, you know, spreading the news in a negative light. I love throwing out propaganda, you know, that's not true.
Well, the thing,
Rick, it makes them feel better about themselves.
But okay, and getting back to sports,
but
these guys, you know, when we talk with all the sports writers, we've talked. I mean, for heaven's sakes, we you know, we have had Mike Lynch on many times. We've had the sports writers from the Salem News, the Gloucester Times, the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, and these guys get into the arenas and actually talk with the athletes, and whereas the radio people don't, and I just can't imagine, you know, if you're covering someone, you know, and you call them an idiot, and then you got to go see them the next day, like, oh, okay, are you ready? Are you ready? I don't understand it. It's not even it's less than civil. I mean, you know, in sports, it's one thing for you and I to talk during a game while watching TV and said, oh man, that was a stupid play. Okay, we can say that, but we're not calling out the athlete as being stupid. Or maybe we are, but we're doing it one-on-one. I can't go on this program and say that. I won't go on this program and say that. I will say that, you know, certain athletes I think are selfish, or at least that's their demonstration. The word I use for Kevin Garnett, I was talking to a friend today. He was at the ceremony last night at the Garden. And I said, Kevin Garnett will never be mistaken as a humble man. He's not ever going to be mistaken for being humble. But that's who he is. And I don't think that's putting him down. And plus, I don't know. You know what I'm saying? You go face to face with someone, but these guys are saying it publicly, but they don't ever have to face these athletes. Someone like Shaughnessy for the Globe criticizes athletes, but then he goes and confronts them. And you know, that takes guts, I'll tell you, but his criticisms are based on performance.
Right. Yeah. Again, it's a way of making up for your own inadequacies, and it sells to people who need validations, who share those same inadequacies, you know, as inabilities, okay, jealousies. So, you know, it's, it is frustrating to see. It's frustrating to hear. You know, you mentioned Kevin Garnett and the retirement ceremony yesterday. I was so thrilled that I was going back and forth for a little bit. I saw the very beginning, and I turned it back, and I went back, and I'm so glad I turned on to the point where he called up Ray Allen, and they basically buried the hatchet of animosity that they felt towards each other following one of the games years ago, more than a decade ago. And that was, it was great to see Ray there, number one, in the front row, and then to come up and extend his arms and wrap him around Garnett, and Garnett did the same thing. And for them to share words out near center court, you know, where they led the Celtics to, you know, their last championship, I just thought that to me was the highlight of the day.
I think every Celtic fan agrees with you on that one. That was great to see, and Garnett is something to watch. He really is. And getting back to announcers, what do you think of Scalabrine?
Scal is fun. Scal is fun. He has gotten better, much as Cedric Maxwell has done over the years on the radio. You know, Scal had to cut his teeth and become better. He's a little goofy sometimes. I thought he was a little goofy during the interview with Kevin, but I think he was, as you said, he was so excited to have the opportunity to do that interview. And of course, Garnett was just bubbling over anyway, so it you can understand Scalabrine probably being a little bit too goofy. But he's come a long way. He's insightful. You know, I think he does a good job as the Celtics color man.
I totally agree, 100%. I think he does a great job, and I think we're lucky to have those guys as Celtic announcers. And speaking of that, I haven't listened to a game on the radio. Is Maxwell still on the radio?
I believe he is, yes.
Okay, good, because he's very insightful. I love listening to Cedric Maxwell. He's a guy I'd love to interview, too. I told you before, I did get to meet Sat Sanders one time, and he was awesome. I'd love to meet Cedric Maxwell. All right, so moving on. Let's see here. What was the next topic I wanted to mention? I don't know. Your turn. You pick a topic.
Okay. I know you want to go there. Baseball being back.
Okay.
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 We'll see how it goes. They're going to squish 162 game season in. You know. So we'll see how all that plays out. It'll be interesting to see the moves the Red Sox make, if they make any, as they get ready to play the season. So, I don't know. I'm still not feeling the love for the game. That's for sure right now. You know, you put the fans through all of this, and then, okay, everything back to normal. Well, you know, we will see. You know, there have been a few moves made around the league, but, you know, well, I don't think anything is as earth-shattering as everybody is thinking.
Yeah, well, it's thank goodness it's a shortened preseason, and I'm happy about that. And they start, I mean, like in 3 weeks, they're underway. So that's a pretty good thing. I want to get back to the high school for a second here, Tim. Just back to the hockey tournament, the Division One tournament continues tomorrow as St. John's Prep will be playing BC High at the Songus in Lowell. That is a 7:45 game. And the Zavarian Brothers will be playing Arlington at the Loring Arena, and that is a 7:30 game. And those games are both tomorrow. And in Division Two, we switch over to Division Two. If you give me 1 second to do that, I have to hit the back arrow, and there it is. We go to Division Two. Now tomorrow, it is Tewksbury. Actually today, excuse me, Tewksbury is playing Duxbury, as we mentioned. That is a 7:30 start, and that is at Loring Arena in Framingham. And Gloucester plays tomorrow at the Songus. That is a 5:30 start against Canton. And hope to be talking with Gloucester coach Derek Geary tomorrow. Going to give it a shot. We'll see if we can catch up with him. So that's Division Two. Now we'll go back again, and we'll go back to Division Three in hockey and hit the magic button here. And hold on, don't go away. Okay, in Division Three, if I read this correctly, we know that Linfield is playing Marlboro tonight. That's in Lowell. That's a 7:45 start. And tomorrow, on the other side of the Final Four in Division Three, it's Scituate and Hanover. That's at the Gallo Arena at 5:15. I don't know where the Gallo Arena is. Okay, so let's go to Division Four, and that'll close out boys hockey. Final Four today, it is Watertown against Stoneham. That game underway at 5:30, almost over now. I'll check the scoreboard when I get a chance here. And Norwell is playing Sandwich tomorrow at the Gallo Arena. So that's boys hockey, which continues. And both in hockey and in basketball, Tim, the North Shore well represented. We had a bunch of teams that went pretty deep into the playoffs. Manchester got eliminated yesterday. Beverly was eliminated last week in boys basketball. Girls went deep. It was a really good run this year. Considering what we've been through in the last 2 years, it was great to see these kids do so well.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of pent-up energy on the part of all the kids to get out there and to demonstrate what they can do, and they turned those long hours of practice and isolation into a focused mission. And you got to congratulate the kids and the coaches for their tremendous effort, and as well as the supporters who followed them around not only throughout the season but into the playoffs.
You know, in another aspect, I had someone ask me today, you know, if we were doing the game tomorrow night, the Gloucester game, and he said he misses the broadcast, as do I, and I'm sure you do too, but I have to compliment all these media people at whatever level it is who have taken up the gauntlet and broadcast these games streaming live, whether it's on video or audio or whatever. Whether it's a video without audio or video with audio, it's enabled parents who can't get to these games and everybody else to watch them. And they've really done a great job. And it's tough for me to admit that because it took the ball right out of our court, man, stole it away from us. But it's great. It's great for high school sports that during this pandemic, so many people were able to at least see their kid play, whether you had sound or not.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you know, we began 2006. Covering the Gloucester State hockey run, ending up on the ninth floor at the Boston Garden with our own broadcast booth, which was quite exciting. And it's fascinating to see how many schools themselves have created maybe out of an audio AV course or whatever. But there are kids now that are doing these kind of productions. That are covering the events. A lot of them are student driven. So, you know, in a way, in terms of high school coverage, we were sort of at the forefront of providing it. And kudos to those schools and communities that are picking up and providing that kind of coverage, not only of hockey, but of basketball, boys and girls. And because it's certainly with today's working world, where so many parents are working two jobs, and, you know, a lot of people working second shift, they can't get to their kids' sporting events. But if they've got, you know, a computer nearby, or even their phone and they get the internet, they can listen to the broadcast of their kids' games, and it just brings you closer. You know, think back when we played sports, you know, if your mother or father couldn't make the game, there was no way of them to know what was going on. I remember my dad rushing home from working at GE in Wilmington to pick up my mom to drive to either into East Boston or to the other side of Boston to go to my high school basketball games. And my dad never saw me play baseball in high school, which was my favorite sport, because we always played in the afternoon. And so he didn't see me play until summertime rolled around. And so do I wish that we had all that technology then? Well, yeah, but we didn't. And so the parents today are the beneficiaries of the advances in the technology and the willingness of people to go out there and to put these things out there for viewership and for listening.
And I have to tell you, you know, we might have been at the so-called forefront with live streaming, but we have to go back to WESX. I mean, they were the flagship of high school sports in this area. Jerry Greenberg is the first guy I met over there. He was a sports director when I first started for a very short time, and then he went on down to Channel 6 in Providence. The way that sports are covered now, or at least in the last 20 years and so on in high school, you know, we have to credit Bill Newell with that. Bill came in here from Vermont, and man, he just dived into the local culture, and he just started making phone calls, talking to people, coaches, and officials, and parents, and kids, and he just had it out there for everybody. He covered so much stuff, and, you know, the newspapers, had great, our local newspapers, as we've discussed many times, have had great sports departments, and they continue that today, decimated though they are in terms of financing and so on. But, Bill Newell just set the bar, man. He set the standard on everything covering high school in this area that the kids have now picked up and other people have picked up as well in terms of these live streaming. But I gotta give all the credit to Bill for doing that, cause he just reached out to every school, every coach in this area.
Yeah, and you know, we're so glad he's still a part of it with the weekly podcast that he puts on with the local sports writers. That again just brings a local flavor across the board to the listening audience.
And he dives deep too. I mean, it's not you know, when I first started, I thought it was like the some of the dingbats that are on you know, Boston media, in that you just have to get up there and talk. You don't have to meet anybody. Just give out your opinion. And that's so much baloney. You have to be informed. You got to talk to the coaches. You got to talk to the kids. And Bill was the first one to do that. In local radio, he just did it. And, you know, it set the standard. Now, Coach, we've blathered enough here. We got to turn it over to the pros. We're going to talk to Mike Grenier here, in a little while, but we're going to have Gary Larrabee punched up first, if I can do this correctly. So wish me luck. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns. Our producer and engineer is Bill Provosky. And, of course, the Sports Writers Podcast tomorrow, dropping at around 8 a.m. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with Gary Larrabee. So stay with us, please.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore. This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're happy now to have Gary Larrabee back, a golf writer and a sports historian. And Gary, welcome back. I suppose we start with the Players this week?
We certainly should. The Players Championship, the Tournament Players Championship, which concluded just a few minutes ago, within the last hour, down in Jacksonville. And Australian Cameron Smith, a two-time winner as an individual player on the tour and a two-time winner in their 1 2-man tournament they have every year, 2-man team tournament they have down in New Orleans. He wins the record $3.2 million first prize that the TPC Championship. He wins by one shot over India's favorite golfer, Anirban Lahiri. And, of course, the big local story this today was the fact that Keegan Bradley, Massachusetts' favorite son on the PGA Tour, was within one shot with two holes to go, and then he unfortunately bogeyed 17, the Island Green par 3, and then made double bogey on 18 to finish, I believe, 5th or 6th, Tim, but still a great showing for Keegan Bradley, a former PGA champion who hasn't won anything for years. But obviously the biggest story is Cameron Smith. He doesn't know how to cut his hair, but he's a very good player. He's a top 10 player right now, boys, and like it or not, he's a player to watch between now and the Masters coming up in 4 weeks.
Yeah, you know, Gary, once again, you know, I love to do this. I love to go through the leaderboard and see the names that are there. And, you know, to an American viewer, it's the land of no names, basically. You know, you got to get out of top 33rd is with Rory, Ian Poulter, Justin Thomas, and you're like going like, holy Moses, McIlroy. It's like, you know, are these guys still just going down there and like playing pitch and putt?
Well, in fact,
no consistent early season performance from these guys.
Well, we've been talking about it for weeks. All these younger names, the lesser known names, are making an imprint here on the tour with a lot of first time winners. And someone like Cameron Smith from Australia, he's going to make Australians forget about Greg Norman if he keeps playing like this, and he's certainly going to be a player to watch. He has been in contention in prior major championships over the last few years. I've always claimed that he's faded down the stretch because his long hair gets in the way. But the fact remains, he is one hell of a player. Wonderful, beautiful swing. And he wins the record, $3.2 million out of a $20 million purse. But a very good point, Tim, that all the big names, most of the big names, were not in the hunt down the stretch. Paul Casey has never won a major. He's from England. He was right there battling with Smith down the stretch, an Australian and an Englishman, on one of America's great golf courses. And of course, they were playing like a dartboard game today with all the rain they've gotten. And just as Smith had predicted before the final round, you're going to have to shoot an awfully low score to win. He shoots 66 and he wins.
Yeah. I'm just looking through the bottom of the list, and John Rahm tied for 55th. It's like, and again, he's with a bunch of no names. Bubba Watson, 68. I mean, these guys just like, I don't know how to describe the lack of effort, lack of concentration. Are they just going out there and going, I'm going to work on this or that in my game, and the rest of it, you know, we'll see what happens. Because they don't need the money.
Tim, as you know. The golf game, the game of golf, is the greatest mysterious game of all. 1 week, you are the greatest player in the history of the game, and the next week, you're just an also-ran, like all these big names we have there playing this week. And, of course, it's just, you know, McIlroy gets off to a good start, but then fades, and nothing new. We should make one more mention of Keegan Bradley, though, whose mom, I believe, still lives in Newburyport. He had an incredible back nine before he slipped up on those last two holes. Just another story of why golf is the craziest game going. He makes birdies, guys. Hold your breath on 10, 11, 12. Two more in 15 and 16. He's five under on the back nine, one shot off the lead. And then he makes bogey on the little rinky-dink par 3, 17. And double bogey on 18. A sad finish, but a great showing for Keegan Bradley. And it's just a perfect example of the game of golf is a mystery that will never be solved.
And, you know, he finished with a 68 for the day. With that kind of an ending, he ended up with a 68.
Yeah, four under, and because the winner shot 66. Yeah. You know, it was a game of low scoring. If you were in the hunt, you had low scoring going on the back, you know, the final 18. And, of course, our own friend Gary Young, who was the chief referee for the entire tournament, had a battle with all the rain. At least they got it done, as he predicted on Friday. He said we would get this tournament done by Friday evening, and he was right.
I marvel at all the young guys that continue to, you know, go out there and really drive the game in this early part of the season to make a name for themselves, to get up on the board and to get some money in their pockets.
Another example of how this is a wide open game every week. We now go to the Valspar in Palm Harbor, Florida, next this coming weekend. And then we go to Austin, Texas for the WGC Dell Match Play Championship. And then the final event before the Masters, the Valero Texas Open. So they got 2 weeks in Texas. And then we're at the Masters. So we're getting closer, guys.
Wow, yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, it's wide open.
Wow.
Yeah, it would seem, you know, by the winners through the winter game and into this early part of the season, you know, are the big names really playing the kind of golf they need to go out there and stun us, you know, at Augusta?
I don't think anybody's in a panic mode amongst the big name players because they've got 3 more weeks to get ready. They really want to be informed the week before, and that's why a lot of them play the Valero Texas Open to get ready. Just have to wait and see, Tim. And right now, like I said, it's a wide-open Masters right now. We'll just have to see how it shakes down between now and then.
Harry, question. We know that a lot of times when American players, when the big names on the tour, go overseas, especially like to the Middle East, They'll get paid appearance money just for showing up and playing in the tournament to draw a crowd. Do American courses during tournaments do that as well?
Not that I'm aware of. I don't think so. I don't think so at all. And, of course, Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan would not look too kindly on that. But I don't believe that's happening at all here on the American courses. Moving right along, I wish you'd give a tip of the Amina bucket cap to Nana Kurtz Madsen, who became the first women professional golfer from Denmark to win on the LPGA Tour. She won yesterday, and another international player wins. I mean, even though I should mention also that Cameron Smith won this tournament today on his home course. He lives in Ponte Vedra, which is right next door to Jacksonville, and he plays. His home course is the tournament championships course there, the TPC at Sawgrass. So in a way, he won on his own course, even though he practices there a lot more than he plays. And lastly, we should mention, after mentioning the insurgency of the Danish women players on the LPGA Tour, that we lost a great name in North Shore amateur golf a few days ago, guys, with the passing of Jack Nyes Jr. from Essex County Club, formerly from United Shoe, one of our all-time great amateur players going back 50 years. We lost Jack the other day. And I should also mention, guys, one other notable passing that I believe Rick knows a lot more about him than many of us, but the passing of the number one Ipswich High athletic sports fan of the last 60 years, John Thomas, the former assistant athletic director and the crack historian and statistician for all sports Ipswich High, going back to when I first covered high school sports for the Salem News back in the late 60s. John passed away the other day at the age of 73. Do you remember him, Rick?
I don't. It sounds familiar. I know Bill does. Bill worked with him, and I know Tom Gallagher and Elliot Roundy and Tom Roundy and those guys, but I'm not familiar, but it sounds like he's of the ilk of Doc Enos and that kind of thing. Every town, thank God, has one of those guys, but they seem to be getting thinner and thinner. So, and he's my age, so that's pretty scary. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yes, well, the other great part of this story was he was an inspiration to all of us who ever came in contact with him, guys. He was also a profile in courage for his entire life, because John was born or came down very in his early, when he was 1 or 2 years of age, he came down with a terrible condition, which made him lose the use of his legs. And then it inverted his two arms inward, and he had very little use of his arms or hands. But he still functioned remarkably as the number one sports fan in Ipswich High athletic history, I'm going to say, even surpassing the great Elliot Roundy. And I'll be writing a tribute about him in the next week or so for the Salem News. But we certainly mourn the passing of John Thomas as well as Jack Nice.
I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, as an aside, one thing that really is, this is totally meaningless with respect to sports. But what you write, Gary, and the printed word and the demise of the printed newspaper, everything going digital, I'm just wondering, 100, 200, 300 years from now, are we going to be able to recover all this stuff, or is there going to be an archive that can be accessed? And I say that because there's no universal digital reader. You know what I'm saying? People have, they got different tablets, they've got different ways of accessing things. Is this stuff all going to be lost? Do you ever think about that?
I don't look that far down the road, Rick, but of course we all hope that we are still here. Or that the human race is still existent in 100 years.
There is
now,
that. There is that. Yep.
With what's been going on in the last few weeks. But it's a good point. And, of course, I'm just a king on the printed word. And I just hope the printed word stays alive in this human society of ours. There will be an archive. There will be some way, a historical method by which we can keep track of what's going on around here, whether it be sports, politics, culture, whatever. But it's just the way the world is going, Rick.
Well, I hope you're right, because we got to have the printed word, but that's the way it's been for the last 10,000 years or so, except now it's all digital. But anyway, Gary, appreciate what you do. Keep doing it, man, and digging deep like that, because I think that sometimes, you know, this stuff is not passed on to the younger generation enough, and they need to know, in my opinion, about those guys like John Thompson and others, because it makes for a more wide open, a better civilization when you know about these things, and kids are better educated. So please keep doing it, and I can't wait to read about that.
And we should also make note, we're hopeful, obviously we've got a big powerhouse hockey game coming up with St. John's Prep,
yeah,
in the Final Four for the state Division One, but we should also make note that Modern Catholic Boys, Division Two, they're the top seed in Division Two, and they've been rolling through their opponent. They're going, they're in the Final Four in Division Two boys basketball in the state. And of course, they're coached by, I may have mentioned this last week, by former Danvers High basketball coach John Walsh.
Right.
John may be going for another state championship a couple of days down the road.
Yeah.
Two days down the road.
Yep. He's a legacy for sure. Exactly. All right, let's see here. This is tomorrow. Never mind. It's mid-March. I'm not going to use the other word. And so we'll be back next Monday night, Gary, I hope.
I hope we're all here.
Thank you so much, as always. I appreciate it, Gary.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Take care, Gary. All right, that's Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer. Tim, I'm going to have to take a segment when I ask you about history and recorded history, because you know what you got what I was trying to say. Up to this point, in terms of civilization, the written word has been the archival stuff that people can access around the world. But now it's digital, but there are all kinds of different digital readers, and that changes on depending upon who's making the most money.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, we have time capsules all over the place, and it's all, you know, printed word, or in some instances, latest ones are on CD. But, you know, the technology to read a CD isn't going to be around in 100 years.
Yeah,
so, yeah. You know, how are they going to be able to transcribe it?
Yeah, is USB going to change? I mean, we had Walkmans. We had, you know, vinyl records. I can't find. I apparently had a couple of desktops that all my pictures, my photographs were on from the last 20 years or so, and I got rid of those desktops without archiving those on some other media, and so I've lost all those pictures, and it's like, man, what do I do? So I was just thinking about that. Guys like Gary and historians, taking the long view, is the future humanity? Are they going to be able to look back at history, you know, in this century, or anything. I don't know. Anyway, just rambling. Coach, let's take a break and we'll come back with Mike Grenier, if that's all right with you.
I bet.
All right, let's do it. This is North Shore Sports Night. Be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back.
Tim, who are you?
That's Tim Kearns and Mike Grenier. And Mike, of course, another sports writer, famous at the Salem News and otherwise. And Mike, I'm going to let you run with the ball right now. Where do you want to start?
Well, you know, it's funny. You guys were just talking about an interesting topic there, bringing up the idea of where things could be archived in the future. And you make a great point, Rick, because what's going to be, there's no universal repository for digital content, right? I mean,
yep.
So I don't know. I mean, you're talking about 100 years down the road, even like 25 years down the road. Will people be able to reach back or reach out and go to a central location and pick out something that happened important, that was important in 2022? You know, it's a legitimate question, and that goes for news, that goes for weather, that goes for sports, goes for cultural events. What is going to be the repository? That's an interesting take, and you know, I don't know if anybody has the answer right now.
Mike, I got an answer. Everybody forward all your materials to Rick's address in Gloucester, and Rick will hold on to tell you.
Yeah, I know. Well, part of, you know, obviously, it's funny. Of course, Gary goes back a long way with the Salem News, and he and I started a long time ago, and I still have some of my favorite clippings from the years going back to like the 1970s, right up until 2015 or whatever, 2016. So at least I have some permanent record of not just my own contribution, but Bill Kaporis, late sports editor, Gary Larrabee stuff, Carl Siegel, who was there in the 1970s and went on to work at the Indianapolis Star. You know, so I do have, I mean, it's all yellowed paper and all that stuff, and but it's still there, and you can read the stories, and you can find out about, for example, Salem High winning a state championship in 1990 in basketball, or the Swampscott girls winning a girls' state championship in basketball in 2009, or, you know, but digital, in terms of digital content, will people be able to do that about this year's state champions? You know, I mean, I don't know.
I saw the game, and I want you to comment on the Celtics any way you want to.
Sure.
And mention young Mr. Brunson. I thought my quick take on the game against Dallas last night was they couldn't put the ball in the ocean. The defense was good, but they just couldn't score.
Right. And it was so disappointing because on a day when they elevated, you know, Kevin Garnett's jersey to the rafters, you know, they were able to dismiss the loss after the game because it was such a sparkling moment. But it just kind of put a little bit of damper on things because the Celtics could have easily won that game. Dallas did not exactly shoot the lights out either. Like you said, Rick, the Celtics didn't give up many points. But Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum shot a combined 13 for 39, and they were like shot something like 25% from the three-point land. So obviously an off game, and they only have 13 games left. So I mentioned last week they don't have much margin for error in terms of moving up into the standings. You know, they're still in fifth place, and they had a golden opportunity yesterday to actually tie the Chicago Bulls for fourth place. But instead, they fell another half game behind, so they're a full game behind the Bulls. And that's an important fact right now. And if they want to do anything in the playoffs, and we've mentioned this, how many times have we mentioned how important home court is in the NBA playoffs? You know, it's so important because you get the extra game at home, that seventh game if it goes to seven, or the fifth game. and then you have the fans who get highly involved during the playoffs. They really motivate a team. So it's just it was a bad loss yesterday for the Celtics because they did not play well. They missed it was a missed opportunity.
Oh, was it my turn, Rick? I'm sorry. You leave me at
home. I said it was a missed opportunity yesterday to move up in the standings and maybe get closer to securing home court for the first playoff round.
Yeah, the way I look at it, Mike, is the way they've been playing it. You're going to have these games. Occasionally, you can't stay at that strategy. You can't stay at that level. The great Celtics team back in the 80s, they'd have a stigma. They'd have a game where it wasn't necessarily a stigma. They'd lose a close game because they just simply couldn't make the shots when they needed them.
Right.
And it's kind of like that's life in the NBA. It's life in any sport. You just gotta have that.
True.
But
can't win them all.
You can't get that hit. You just don't turn that double play, and the other team beat you by a run. Or you let a guy get loose for a couple more yard gain, keeps the drive going. They end up scoring. They kick a field goal or something, and you lose a game. As fans and even the players, you look back at, we should have won that game. But you can always look and see one or two small things you didn't do
right, and
let the other team get ahead of you.
Right. And I think maybe the tough thing about yesterday's loss is that the next four games are on the road, Tim. In other words, as we know, it's a West Coast trip. And as you know, those East Coast teams going out to the West, right, Rick, it's often a very difficult trip. And they open with the Golden State Warriors, who happen to have – well, pretty much tied with Memphis for the second-best record in the entire NBA. So you're facing Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, who had like 38 points the other night, shooting the lights out. They have to go on their home court and try to win there. And also on that part of that four-game trip, they have the Denver Nuggets with a potential MVP kick, definitely an MVP kick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Kick, who was a tremendous player. They got to play them on the road. And then supposedly the easy games would be the Sacramento Kings and the Oklahoma City Thunder. However, the Thunder game comes on the second night of a back-to-back. And, on the road, when you're going to out west and you're playing the second game of a back-to-back, no guarantees there, no matter how bad the Thunder's record is, So I think it's too bad they couldn't win at home yesterday. I felt bad for Garnett, basically, because he was such a great player in 2008 and beyond. It would have been nice for him to have sort of the cherry on the top of the sundae yesterday, because he was such a great competitor. Definitely, Rick, I don't know, we love to talk about Dave Cowens, but I'd say Dave Cowens and Tim, I'd love to hear your comment. Dave Cowens and Garnett, possibly, at least in terms of like visibility, the most demonstrative players, the most intense players on the court that the Celtics have ever had.
What do you think?
That's the exact word that I was thinking of, Mike, as you were putting that sentence together, was the word intense. I see Collins coming back on Stevens in that low defensive crouch he used to get into.
Oh, yeah.
With his feet wide apart, his arms extended, like he was guarding the point guard. He was down.
Yeah. Almost looked like a linebacker, like Lawrence Taylor, ready to make a tackle, because he would actually slap the floor at times. Right, Rick? He would slap the floor. He was so intense that he would get so into it. And just a ferocious competitor. But then again, we had that type of guy in the 1970s by the name of Dave Cowens, an undersized center, 6'8", who played the big men as tough as anybody in the history of the league.
I got to ask you, Mike, my two favorite players, on the Celtics right now, and this is going to sound weird. Obviously, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, are the most talented. But my two favorite players right now are Marcus Smart and Robert Williams. And what do you see, how do you look at Williams' growth? Because it seems to me he gets better and better every game.
Oh, yeah.
And even when he's not blocking a shot, he's changing the arc of the shot.
It's funny you should mention that, because yesterday there were several occasions when even Luka Doncic didn't want to deal with him. He would take him into the paint, and then he would back off and pass to a teammate or do a step-back three-pointer. And I saw Robert Williams even guarding like a Jalen Brunson or the opposing point guard.
Yeah.
And they just, when they were getting into the paint, because Robert Williams is quick enough to stay with a very quick guard, in other words. And usually the big men aren't quick enough to handle the guard who's penetrating. And Robert Williams has gotten to be not only a great team defensive player, but a great individual one-on-one defender. That I see that more with every game, Rick. I'm so glad you mentioned him, because we're seeing the evolution of a guy who wasn't nearly this good a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
This year he's made a giant, he's gone up the ladder several steps, you know, and of course he's still got room to grow because his offensive game can get a lot better. So I love your point about Robert Williams. And Marcus Smart, I think he's gotten a bit more mature in terms of, there were several times in the close game yesterday when he passed up a three-pointer in the fourth quarter because he knew he wasn't shooting it well, and he just passed to a team. And unfortunately, Jason Tatum wasn't shooting him any better. But what I'm saying is that he was mature enough to recognize the situation late in the game and not take a 24-foot shot and, you know, instead driving the ball whenever he could. So, you know, you're right. Your point is well taken on both players. And the guy I want to break up, Tim, if you could comment, is I'm a little concerned about Derek White, who they obtained as a very good player from the San Antonio Spurs, and he's played like 13 games with the Celtics, and he's only shooting 24% on three-pointers and like 40% overall. And Jason Richardson, who they let go in that trade to San Antonio, is shooting the ball much better than Derek White. He's not getting as much time, but I'm a little concerned that Derek White has not been the consistent contributor that they hoped he would be and that he needs to be in the playoffs, because he'll definitely be the sixth man who comes in and hopefully makes a difference as the first substitute.
Yeah, you don't know if it's from, you know, over trying, you know,
right,
to justify earning all of his time. The other guy, he's getting in, getting minutes. He's probably getting trash time, so it's easy to get down there, play relaxed, take an easy shot, make some, and so your stats look a little skewed in comparison to White. I like the overall hustle that he brings. I mean, he pushes that ball up court. He makes the other team play defense, get back there, forces them to get back on their heel, and you can get a lot of easy buckets. You got a team constantly backpedaling, and they're not looking where they're going.
He's a solid defender, too. He's a solid defender.
But again, you know, he's got to find his comfort zone, his range, you know.
Yeah.
Figure out just where it is that he wants to shoot from, where it's best going to fall, and get to that spot and work on just getting it in a flow so that there's, you know, your mechanics are sound. It's like swinging a bat, hitting a golf ball. If your mechanics aren't right, you're not going to get the shot you want.
Right.
And maybe that's something that he's got to work on, because he plays at such a frenetic pace.
He's
in the moment where there's a calm, where you can set your feet, we can square up, you get your shoulders, you know, the whole nine yards, and get that good extension and put that shot in the net. If you're part of this run offense, I see you're just running. You're running through your mechanics faster than you should operate them.
Right. Well, and his minutes aren't going to go down. His minutes are only going to go up. They're not going to go down. So he does have to start stepping up his offensive game, because come the playoffs, as we know, teams shorten the bench, and they might go only eight deep in the playoffs. And he's going to be a key guy, the key guy, coming off the bench, and I also hope Daniel Tice starts to find a niche and contribute more regularly, because his playing time has really been scattered, and he hasn't had a chance to show much so far. I'm kind of surprised at that, because one of the reasons they acquired him was that he's used to being around the Celtics. He played 4 years with them and was a major contributor, and now he seems to be sort of a minor contributor, and I'm a little concerned about that, too, because I really feel he has the ability in backing up Robert Williams to, you know, give Robert Williams a legitimate blow for 10, 12, 15 minutes a game and contribute in his own way.
Well, the concerns that you and Tim have both had have been addressed up to this point. So, well, let's see if that happens, because that spot on your analysis is most excellent. Let me change the subject here, Mike, as we head toward the midnight hour here and get out of this thing. Very quickly, March Madness?
Oh, you love it. I absolutely love it. Watching even the conference tournaments is exciting because even a number eight seed in their own conference, they feel they can win their conference and get the automatic bid. And Texas A&M was a perfect example this past weekend. They won three straight games against much higher opponents before finally losing in the final. A team that I personally love watching is the University of Vermont. You always have an underdog, right? There's a New England team, University of Vermont, that nobody even knows about. And they're 28-5. And they won their conference tournament easily. And there's a kid that I personally know on that team. He's a walk-on, a 6'7" kid from Scarborough, Maine. I know the kid. He won a high school title in Maine. Didn't get any scholarship because he wasn't good enough, certainly, at least initially thought, to be a Division I player. And all of a sudden, he came and he walked on at the University of Vermont, a Division I program, and he's played so well his first 2 years that now the school is awarding him a scholarship for the remainder of his college career.
Cool.
What a great story. I mean, and the kid is a backup center. He's like 6'8", and he's just a great kid. And they're playing out in Buffalo, which is the nearest regional to Gloucester and Salem, Mass. You know what I mean? That's the closest they get. But they have Arkansas in the first round. And as far as favorites, I kind of like Arizona, Rick and Tim. I've seen them play several times on those late West Coast games that Bill Walton often does the commentary. He's a wacko. What an entertaining guy he is, Bill Walton, the former Celtics. I like them a lot. You know, obviously, Gonzaga should be a factor. Kansas is outstanding. You know, I think any of those teams could win it. What do you think, Tim, Rick?
Yeah, I think it's a wide-open field this year. You mentioned Vermont. They're the team in New England that would probably be considered the best team if Boston College gets a lot of ink. But Vermont puts out a great product, and they've been in the tournament a number of times.
Oh, several times, correct. And they've done a great job with coach who's been around now for 10, 11 years. I mean, they won their conference tournament games this past weekend by an average of 36 points. Three games, an average winning margin of 36 points. That's pretty impressive. And, you know, obviously, it's not a highly regarded conference, but within their conference, they're a powerhouse, and they have very skilled players. They're fundamentally sound. They're on TV, obviously, Thursday night. We'll get it here in New England. They're on TV. They have a late game, like 9:45 or something like that. But they're a number 13 seed. They play a number 4 seed in Arkansas, which, of course, is going to be a very athletic team. But they're fun to watch. And, you know, you kind of root for the underdog. You know, we've seen the Loyola of Chicago in the past, and Gonzaga used to be the small engine that could. And now they're a powerhouse. So, you know, you kind of love seeing those underdog teams pull off the upsets early in the tournament. That, to me, is it's just so exciting to watch the whole thing. And I've been to several Final Fours, and that's a blast, but even the first couple of rounds here are always great to watch because there's so much drama, and there are always upsets. You always see a number 13 seed, you know, win one game, maybe a number 15 seed knock off a number 2, and, you know, you wonder how Coach K will end up this year because he's a good team. They're a highly seeded team, but it's not really one of his best teams. I don't see them winning it. I don't see Duke winning it.
Well, I was going to ask you, before Tim gets the final word in here, among Patino, Calipari, and Krzyzewski, who has the best chance?
Yeah, okay.
Because I'm rooting against two of them, by the way.
Yeah. All right, we're talking Krzyzewski, Duke, you're talking Calipari, and who's the other one you mentioned?
Patino, is he in it?
I don't think so.
I don't even know where he is.
Well, he's out at Long Island now.
Okay.
They're not a factor, but I guess I would root for Coach K over Calipari.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, no doubt about that. Calipari is, you know, you don't know what he does in the alleyways in these recruits.
Yep.
But obviously this, I don't see Kentucky winning it. I really don't. I think, you know, they could win a couple of games, but I think, you know, you're talking Arizona. UCLA is a factor out in the West. The Big Ten, I don't understand the committee's love with the Big Ten. 9 or 10. How did Michigan make the tournament? They were 17-14. They have a coach who slugged another coach, Juwan Howard, slugged the coach and got a 5-game suspension.
Yep.
And yet they got rewarded with, like, you know, getting picked for the tournament and like a number 11 seed with a 17-14 record. I don't understand that. They have a real love for the Big Ten, the committee does, and I don't remember the last time a Big Ten team won it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, well, as much as I like the men's tournament, and again, this will be, it's full of frenzy. You know, every game is played at breakneck speed, especially opening game. You're right,
yeah.
Mike. The opening games are so much fun to watch because you're exhausted. You need like a week to recover before they go to the next round.
You know what? We should mention Providence College, Rick. Another New England team, number 4 seed. And they lost, obviously, they were crushed by Creighton in the Big East Conference semifinal. But overall, they've had like 27, the most wins in school history. They have great tradition. Ed Cooley has done a great job in his years at Providence College. And they're a number 4 seed. They could do some damage. They're a very good team. They have a knack for winning close games. They did it all. It was like 10-2 in games decided by 5 points or less. They're a really good all-around team that has a good following and a great tradition. And we, you know, guys like you and me, Rick and Tim, we remember, you know, Ernie DiGregorio and Marvin Barnes and Kevin Steakum, who eventually played with the Celtics. That's tremendous tradition at Providence College.
All right, Mike, your assignment this week is to take notes on all this stuff and report back to us.
Yeah, we'll do.
And I also need you to check up on our local guys in the NBA, if you don't mind.
Absolutely, Rick. And I can drop one more bomb on you here. I am enjoying watching the Lakers disintegrate. Last night, they gave up 48 points in the first quarter. They gave up 40 points in the third quarter. Think about that. 88 points in two periods.
Yeah.
And they gave up 140 overall. And I watched them play, and they basically quit on each other and the coach. And they're 9 games under 500. And the New Orleans Pelicans, who have been a sorry product for several years, are a game and a half behind them. And if they surpass the Lakers, who have 3 or 4 potential Hall of Famers, the Lakers won't even be in the play-in, right? They'll finish in 11th place and out of the playoffs altogether. So it's been an incredible descent for the Lakers. It's unbelievable given the talent they have.
Well, then the next part of the assignment will be, is the NBA changing? The philosophy of super team and super teammates.
Well, that's a great question, Rick, because on paper, at the beginning of the season, the Lakers would have been a prohibitive favorite because they had Westbrook and, you know, LeBron and Carmelo and Anthony Davis, and they have just been a complete flop.
Mm. One more, Tim.
I got one word for the Lakers, Mike.
Yes.
Old. They're all old.
Yeah,
what happened
to
you? Celtics, you know, the victory, we kept hanging out. We didn't want them to break up. They got old, they broke down, and you know they all had to go away. But you're right. I love watching it because you know they're all the big mouths, you know, and it's perfect. My last word, UConn women.
Oh yeah, I know. I knew that would be your last word. Now you can have the last word on that. Are they going to win it, Tim?
Wow, you know, I wouldn't. Bet against them. I really wouldn't. You know, my brother and I both love them. We watch them every game that they're on the TV. You know, they're back. They're healthy. They've got some big additions on the team this year to supplement the starting five. They've got another outstanding freshman defensive player of the year in the country. I think a freshman or sophomore. That's ridiculous.
Right.
So, I mean, does he have all the ingredients? He certainly does. Can he get some of the breaks?
Maybe they could celebrate at the White House the day after Tom Brady goes there. Right? Tom Brady is back. He could lead them to another Super Bowl. Would you bet against Tom Brady? I wouldn't.
No, but, you know, is this going to turn into the Brett Favre, I retired more times than Brett Favre?
No, but you know what? He still has the goods. That's the difference. You look at his numbers last year, right, Rick? We know he had one of his best years ever.
Yeah, you know, and it's going to be crazy. I mean, if they stay healthy, if they can add a couple of quality pieces, you know, I mean, you got to like the core that's there. You know, they made the playoffs again. Tom is still Tom.
Yep.
And as long as he's got Tom being Tom, you've got a chance.
Oh, no question. No question.
All right, boys, this has been fun. I got to go.
All right, Rick, thank you so much.
Mike,
thank you so much.
We appreciate it, man. It's always so much fun. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Yeah, sounds good, Rick. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
All right,
that is Mike Grenier, another sports historian, sports writer, and basketball analyst. Tim, last word, what's up?
Well, the results from my recent biopsy came back on my cancer, and it was a good report. So now I'm just waiting for the medical procedure to be scheduled and then go in and have the procedure, but the doctor feels very good about things.
That's good news, man. I'm happy for that, and I will keep praying, brother. That's great. That's awesome. All right, dude, we'll talk next Monday.
Very good. We shall see you.
All right, coach, be well.
Okay, Rick.
Right, bye-bye. That's Tim Kearns, who is our sports analyst and our ambassador of goodwill. And on behalf of Bill Newell, who will be hosting the Sports Writers Podcast, dropping around 8 a.m. tomorrow here on MSO News Sports, and Bill Proposky, our producer and engineer, and, of course, Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore. Thank you for joining us. If you have anything you want to pass along, please do so at msonewsports@gmail.com. That's msonewsports@gmail.com. This is MSO News Sports. This has been North Shore Sports Night. Be well.